Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Sarah Chaffee. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Anne Gager, who holds a PhD in zoology from the University of Washington and completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard. She is a senior fellow of the Center for Science and Culture and serves as a scientist at Biologic Institute, as well as director of science communications at the Center for Science and Culture. She joins us today to share about the intricacies of the cell. Welcome, Anne.
Glad to be here.
If you had to make an analogy about a cell, what would you say a cell is like?
Well, for me, I've always thought of a cell as being like a city because of all the different processes that go on there. We have information storage, accessing information, exchange of information with the outside, manufacture, power plants, roadways, transport, waste control, all kinds of things that the cell does, which are analogous to what humans do in cities.
So what is in the nucleus of the cell?
And you can say the nucleus is like the heart of the cell, where, or you can also call it the library of the cell. I like to think of it as being like the Library of Congress, where all the information that's necessary for life is stored. It's also similar to the Library of Congress. I don't know if you've ever been there, but they keep the majority of the books up in stacks, which are relatively inaccessible to the public. And when you need information, you send them a slip, and then they send someone up to go get the book that you want, and they bring it down, and they hand it to you to read in one of the carrels there. DNA in the cell is quite well organized. Not all of it needs to be accessed at the same time, so it's packaged away and arranged in a neat fashion so that when something is necessary to be found, it can be. And then the parts of the DNA that are being used actively are in the center and available to be read as needed. So that's why I like the image of a library.
What is the structure of DNA?
Okay, DNA is a very interesting molecule with very special properties. It's composed of two long intertwining strands. They wrap around each other, and they have anti-parallel direction. So one strand runs in one direction, and the other strand that wraps around it runs in the opposite direction. The thing that's cool about DNA is the strands are composed of nucleotides that bind to each other, much like a jigsaw puzzle. If you imagine a piece of a jigsaw puzzle that's one row, and imagine a very strange jigsaw puzzle where the connections between each piece are the same in one dimension. So a row of pieces that are all connected with the same type of junction. They can only connect in that way. Then you have the opposite strand that has the same sort of arrangement. The pieces connect to each other in a stereotypical way. But between the strands, there's a very precise way they have to connect. Let me clarify that. The nucleotides that make up DNA are A, T, C, and G. And on each strand, the A's, T's, C's, and G's can arrange in any order. They bind to each other in a stereotypical way, but the order in which they bind can be in any combination. Between the strands, if you have a G, you always have a C paired to it. If you have an A, you always have a T paired to it. So this is the way that it makes it easy for us to copy DNA into new kinds of DNA. You can unzip the two strands with their pattern of binding and then just copy C to G and A to T between the unzipped strands, and you end up with two strands instead of just the original one. It's not easy to describe in words without pictures.
How much DNA do we have in our cells?
One cell, one nucleus, If you were to unspool all the DNA and stretch it out, it would run 6 feet. Just one cell, one nucleus, 6 feet of DNA packaged, which is why it has to be packaged in such an organized fashion. Otherwise, you would have a terrible snarl.
And how do particular genes in DNA get turned off and on?
Okay, you raise a good point. DNA, at least part of it, is composed of genes that make protein, encode protein, we say. And the cell uses certain genes at certain times. They have to be turned on at the right time and turned off at the right time. And the way the cell does this is it uses proteins themselves to do it. The proteins bind to the DNA next to a gene that needs to be activated. But it's a lot more complicated than that. Right in front of the gene is something called a promoter. And when it's time to turn on a gene, a series of proteins bind to the promoter and accumulate, and they interact with each other. And then when the last protein comes along, the RNA polymerase, it gets activated and it shoots off at really high rate of speed and starts copying the DNA into RNA. It races along the DNA and is copying RNA, just like DNA gets copied, only this time it's being copied into RNA. And it goes at the rate of 30 nucleotides per second, which is 6 times faster than a human being can type. It's really cool to watch animations of this process to see how fast it goes.
We've talked about how DNA is copied, but how do you make protein?
All right, that's another good question. Once you have the RNA is the message that goes between the DNA and carries the information to make protein. The RNA has to get translated into protein. So there's this machine called a ribosome which does this translation. It is composed of RNA and protein itself. It has to go through a special manufacturing process. And what it does is it reads the RNA, sort of like spools the RNA through it, sort of like a ticker tape. And as it goes, it translates the RNA in sets of 3 codons into amino acids. So one codon specifies a particular amino acid, another codon, yet another. There are 20-some amino acids. The ribosome's job is to match codons to amino acids and then string them together. And once the amino acids are all strung together, you have a protein amino acid sequence, and the protein then has to fold properly into a 3-dimensional shape that gives it its function. So you can see it's a relatively intricate process. The ribosome chugs along at the rate of about 6 amino acids per second. Not as fast as the RNA polymerase moves, but still respectable given it has to sort through 20 different amino acids to find the right one. It's an amazing process to go from DNA to RNA to protein. The information in the DNA is coded in such a way that it can be decoded, translated into protein. And how that coding happened, we don't know. It's one of the mysteries of life.
It seems that both proteins and DNA are necessary. You know, which came first?
Well, that's a question that's actively debated by scientists. There are those who think that the replicator, or the DNA, had to come first, or they say RNA came first. And then there are others that say, no, proteins and metabolism had to come first. The truth is that we can't unravel it. As it is now, you need protein to make DNA. You need DNA to specify how to make protein. You need RNA to make protein. You need DNA to make RNA. In some cases, the RNA is made back into DNA. Everything's intertwined. And so we can't say which came first. There are people who like to say that RNA came first, but the evidence is not conclusive because RNA is not particularly stable. It's not the best way of storing information, and there still leaves the problem of how do you go from RNA to DNA, which is the current situation. Just to give you an example of one of the things that would have to be solved would be the origin of the ribosome, that machine which takes RNA and turns it into protein. The ribosome is an incredibly complex structure. It's made up of protein and RNA itself. It folds in a stereotypical way, and it's present in all cells. It has to be there in order for this process of being alive to take place. It's ancient. It has to go back to the very earliest times, and yet it takes, I don't know how many different proteins and RNAs to come together to fold in a specific way and carry out their function.
Well, thank you for coming on the show with us today, Dr. Gager.
You're welcome. I hope it was interesting.
Join us next time for more on ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Thank you for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.